Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host for Catholics around the world. Today is the Feast of the Assumption of Mary, and a very blessed feast to you. And if you're like, what? I forgot. Well, there's a mass at parishes all around the world today in honor of Mary. If you have the opportunity, avail yourself of it. 888-318-7884 is our number here. And as we start this hour, we're going to begin by talking about the problem of evil. And it strikes me that many times when people say they don't believe in God and you ask, well, what's the primary reason? Evil and the fact of the intensity of human suffering, especially at the hands of other human beings, is evidence to people that there is no God. Is it in fact a contradiction to think that a good God might be the creator and sovereign of a world that is nonetheless vulnerable to evil? We'll talk about that with Carlo Broussard today. Carlo is an apologist here at Catholic Answers, speaker extraordinaire, and author of Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. Hi, Carlo.
Hey, Cy.
A blessed feast day to you.
Same to you, brother.
And just so people know, when we're talking about the Assumption of Mary, what are we talking about?
When Mary was bodily assumed mm-hmm. into heaven, which is distinct for our listeners out there. Many people confuse Jesus' ascension,
yes, right,
with Mary's bodily assumption. Jesus ascended into heaven by virtue of his own power. Mary was bodily assumed by the power of God, Mary receiving her glorified body, which we will receive at the end of time, but Mary having her glorified body and being assumed into the heavenly kingdom to experience the beatific vision. So there are two people in heaven, right, who yeah. have those glorified bodies. That's Jesus
yes.
and Mary, and we wait in joyful hope for that time when we will receive our glorified bodies. So the Feast of the Bodily Assumption is a great feast for us to reflect mm-hmm. upon our own bodily resurrection and bodily assumption, if you will, to be assumed into the glory of God, right, with our glorified bodies, as Mary was the precursor. So Mary's the signpost, right, pointing us in that direction. And of course, that bodily assumption being due to her being free from original and personal sin. So being free from original and personal sin, there would be no consequence of sin, namely corruption of the body. So God preserving her body from corruption and giving her body those glorious characteristics and assuming her into heaven. And that's what we're celebrating.
And does she have a job in heaven now?
Indeed she does.
What's her job?
Her job is to be the intercessor as the Queen Mother. She is the Queen Mother of the Davidic Kingdom of Jesus, and so her role as Queen Mother is one of an intercessor. So she intercedes for us on our behalf to King Jesus, through whom we have access to the throne of grace of God our Father.
Wow. Well, we can be very grateful then for Mary's Assumption and for Mary.
Amen.
On this feast day. So I imagine we'll get around to her role maybe as we talk about the problem of evil as well. So a person comes to you, Carlo, and they say, I can't believe in God because just look at all the evil in the world.
Right.
What do you say to them?
Well, it's a very complex situation, very complex okay. issue. There's a lot of different aspects to the problem of evil. So whenever the problem of evil comes up, we often have to ask questions first in order to discern exactly what is the hang-up. You might okay. even say which problem of evil, right? Because there's two broad different categories of the problem of evil. So many philosophers will distinguish between the intellectual problem of evil and the emotional problem of evil, right?
Okay.
So the intellectual problem of evil is It's a problem for the intellectual inquirer for whom it's an intellectual puzzle. where they're trying to intellectually solve philosophically how an all-good God can exist and evil exists at the same time, and is evil a good enough reason to justify one's rejection of God's existence, right? So it's sort of an intellectual puzzle that one is trying to solve philosophically. But the emotional problem of evil, it arises for the person that's not really interested, who's not really interested in philosophical answers to mm-hmm. the issue of evil. They're just in a lot of pain. They're angry that God is allowing bad things to happen to them. And they're just in the darkness. And they're trying to find some light, trying to find some purpose and meaning. So depending on which of these two broad problems of evil one is experiencing or facing will determine how I'm going to answer or approach and minister to that person who is having a hang-up with that. And we'll talk more about this as we go throughout the show, but fundamentally, if it's an intellectual problem, well, then I can employ the tools of philosophy
mm-hmm.
in order to try and work through solving that intellectual puzzle. If it's the emotional problem, well, then I might put the philosophy tool in the shed, right, and take out my theology, or take off my philosophy hat and put on my theology hat. And that's not to say that philosophy and theology are mutually exclusive. No, you know, they aid each other, right?
Yes.
But in the sense that by addressing the emotional problem of evil and putting on the theology hat, we're basically looking at the light that Christianity shines in the midst of the darkness.
Okay.
Given the revelation of Jesus Christ and the teaching of his apostles in the New Testament, that there is some light to be shown in the midst of the darkness, given the revelation of Jesus Christ, that would allow one to embrace the suffering in a way that gives purpose and meaning to it, right? Mm-hmm. And that it's not going to, and that the suffering will come to an end, right? And will be redeemed in the heavenly kingdom. And so heaven comes into play, the idea of redemptive suffering comes into play, and how the discordant note of suffering is used to create a whole new symphony of a redemptive suffering, where suffering can contribute to my own salvation and salvation of others. And that's sort of a pastoral approach, right? It's trying to address that emotional problem and saying, hey, look, there is purpose and meaning in this suffering, and it does not have to be wasted. It can be used for a greater good, right?
Yeah.
And of course, there's some philosophical principles underlying that. But for the intellectual problem, well, then we kind of get into some of the weeds there, because even the intellectual problem has a couple of different versions.
Okay.
So, all right. So if we can just sort of camp out here on the intellectual problem, there's two versions of the intellectual problem of evil. One version is called the logical version okay. of the intellectual problem of evil. And that basically states, well, if God exists, then evil can't exist. Well, since evil does exist, well, then God doesn't exist. You see, if God exists, evil can't exist.
Okay.
But evil does exist. And so God must not exist. So the logical version states, it is logically contradictory to say God exists and evil exists. They are completely mutually excluding one another. They are logically contradictory with one another. You can't have both God and evil, basically. The other version of the intellectual problem of evil is the evidential version. And that basically says, well, maybe they're not logically contradictory with each other. But I mean, come on, Carlo, yeah. There's so much useless evil in the world.
Right.
Gratuitous evil, right? Unwarranted, no good reason for. You know, I mean, look at all the atrocities in the world. No good could possibly come from that. And so given the amount of evil and the useless evil in the world from which I cannot see greater goods coming, I have good reason
yeah.
to think that God does not exist. So rather than taking the strong position and saying they're logically incompatible, it takes this sort of weaker position and says, well, they might be compatible, but there's just so much evil and useless evil that I have good reason to – I am justified in my atheism in saying that God does not exist. And so depending on which version of the intellectual problem yeah. of evil that a person is struggling with will determine how I approach that. And even for the logical version, Cy, there's a couple of different issues there involved. Because for some atheists, it might be the logical version of the intellectual problem of evil. It may be, well, if God is the creator of all things and evil exists, well, then God must be the creator of evil, in which case he's not all good, right? So the problem has to do with God being the creator of all things, you see. But for some, the logical version of the intellectual problem of evil, for some, the problem is, well, it's God permits evil when he has the power to vanquish it and wipe it out. And if he has the power to get rid of all evil, well, then, and he's all good, well, then he ought to be getting rid of that evil, because a person who's all good, they're going to get rid of the evil as best they can, right?
Yes.
So for some, the intellectual problem has to do with God permitting the evil. And for others, it has to do with God being the creator of all things. So that's going to determine my answer as well. And so hopefully in today's show, we can go through these various versions or subsets of the problem of evil and see what sorts of answers that we could possibly give to them.
And human beings are complicated creatures. So these may exist in us in a kind of shifting and kind of maybe overlapping reality in our own mind.
Yeah. And so what I do in my book, Prepare the Wayside, I devote three chapters in the book to the problem of evil and parsing out these distinctions of the problem of evil and providing the reader with strategies on how to address each of these subsets of the problem of evil, so that when you're in a conversation, once you learn the material in the book and you assimilate into your own thought process, then you're able to discern, you know, which of these kinds of problems of evil the person is dealing with, and that gives you a clue on how to help that person and remove the obstacle of the problem of evil so that they can embrace the truth of God's existence.
That's one of the things I like about Prepare the Way, this idea that you're trying to be of service to another person, remove obstacles from to truth for them. You know what? I think it'd be a good book. You got a kid going off to college, even a kid in high school,
right,
a school start, because really school is sometimes you almost get the sense that – well, you do get the sense that there are agendas at play in many of these schools, and those agendas are to lead young people away from the very things that we want to say no. Those are true things, and and the more you have of God, the gospel, and the church in your life, the more full your life is going to be.
Amen. Man fully alive. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so that I think that's part of why your book, Prepare the Way, is part of the sale at shop.catholic.com, the back-to-school specials.
Oh, fantastic.
It's back-to-school specials to – if parents or grandparents or, you know, brothers or sisters want to get something for someone going off to college or even, I think, heading to high school, Prepare the Way would be good for them.
Yeah.
You just go to shop.catholic.com and stuff is on sale right now because it's the back to school sale.
Catholic Answers Live.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Catherine Zeltner.
There are so many misconceptions when it comes to abortion and assisted suicide. It's really confusing, and I think for a lot of people, they don't know how to talk about these things. EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, we help to change that. We help to really untangle these web of lies. Listeners can expect to become informed and then grow more confident so that they can then discuss and dialogue these issues, and together we can really impact culture in that way.
EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, Sunday morning at 10 a.m. on EWTN Radio.
We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, a very blessed feast of the Assumption to you and to your family. We're talking this hour with Carlo Broussard about the problem of evil, a problem that he tackles in his book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. And I suppose you can get stuck on this problem of evil, and it's an obstacle to all three of those. And you broke down for us in the first segment about there actually, when we talk about the problem of evil, for the individual person, it could be any one of a number of things,
sure,
or a combination of all these different things. So
yeah,
there is the emotional problem of evil that I experience that every time I stub my toe. Like I'm like, come on, come on. Like, how could this possibly be part of your plan?
Right.
And I guess my faith is shaken very easily, Carlo. I'm sorry to admit that to you. But
and of course, that's a lot easier to deal with than losing a child.
Yeah, right. Or something,
you know,
right,
to illness or whatever.
But you talked about the intellectual obstacles, and you kind of divided them generally into two. One that's logically it can't be that there's a good God and there's this evil.
They're logically incompatible.
Right. And then there's the evidential one that's like, well, maybe they're not logically incompatible, but come on. And this is a very powerful argument.
Indeed it is.
I remember Pope Benedict in an interview one time saying that somebody said, well, what do you want to know when you finally meet Jesus? You know, what would you like to know? And he said, why so much suffering?
Yeah.
I'd like to know that.
Yeah, and there's an important point to make as we, you know, go through and think through the problem of evil that, you know, by no means, especially in my book and what we do here at Catholic Answers in trying to address this issue, by no means are we saying that, you know, we've dispelled the darkness entirely.
Right.
You know, right. I mean, as the Catechism even points out, the permission of evil in the world is a mystery. There are mysterious elements,
yeah,
about God permitting evil in the world and not vanquishing it right here and right now, which he will at the end of time,
right?
So there is mystery involved. There is darkness, but it's not complete darkness. And that's all what we're,
yes,
trying to say is that there is some light to be shown in the midst of the darkness by the natural light of human reason,
yep,
that can at least show that God's permission of evil is not contrary to his goodness. And even through the light of Christianity, that light grows, right? Because it goes beyond what the natural light of human reason can show. So that light grows and enables an individual to endure or to embrace, to walk through the darkness with that greater light, to where the darkness is not all-encompassing, you see. So, you know, I remember when I was working with Father Spitzer, and he would, you know, talk on the problem of evil and stuff when I was working with him at the Magis Center, and he would often say, in no way do we want to trivialize the experience of evil in people's lives.
Yes.
And in no way are we trying to say that evil and our experience of evil is not tragic, but what we do want to say is that it's not ultimately tragic.
Yeah.
And that comes in with the revelation of Jesus Christ and the dark door of time being thrown open with our destiny being revealed, namely heaven. But of course, even philosophy can contribute to that light in the darkness as well in trying to solve some of the intellectual problems.
Well, let's start with the most coldly logical. I don't mean that in a bad way, but just the most rationalist argument, intellectual argument here, and that is, look, if God created everything, evil exists.
Therefore, God must have created the evil.
God created the evil.
Right.
Yeah, so that would either make that makes God an absurdity, that means there is no God, or it makes God kind of evil.
Right, if he's creating evil,
all
right?
So help me out there.
Yeah, so the traditional response going all the way back to Augustine himself in addressing that particular problem of the problem of evil, right?
Yes.
Is to try and explain and get a proper understanding of evil. And that's what I do in my book in this first strategy here in Chapter 7 is to try to get a proper understanding of evil as a privation of a due good, right? So it's a lack of being in philosophy, we would say, lack of being that ought to be there, right? A lack of a due good. Because being and good are convertible in the traditional Thomistic way of looking at things, the philosophy of St. Thomas Aquinas, right? And then, of course, going back to Aristotle himself. So here's how – and so the point being is that if evil is a privation of a due good or a lack of being, well, then it's not created by God. That is to say, evil is not a subsistent reality with positive qualities that God brings into existence and sustains in existence like you and me. So what are we talking about here? Well, here's an example. What is it that makes blindness bad?
Yeah.
We would call that a physical evil, right? Blindness.
Right.
Well, what is it about blindness that makes it bad? It's the lack of sight.
Yes.
It's the lack of what ought to be there, right? The eye ought to be seeing. Since it doesn't, we say it's bad. It's defective. There's a physical evil there. It's a privation of what ought to be there, given the kind of thing it is, right? Another example, I like this example I've got from a couple of philosophers, you know, a holy sock. You know, you got a sock with a hole in it, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure you got a few of those, right?
None, Carlo. Every night I darn my socks.
It's a bad sock. Why? Wow. Because it's lacking the fabric that ought to be there, given the kind of thing it is, right?
Right.
Okay? So, and even with moral evil, whenever somebody kills an innocent human being, right, we say that is morally evil. Why? Because there is a lack of justice. The person fails to give the other person what is his due, respect of his dignity and of his life. It's also a failure in love of neighbor. So there's a privation of what ought to be there in that relationship between the two individuals, namely justice and love. So evil, whether we're talking about moral evil like sin or physical evil like suffering and destructive forces of nature when things corrupt or something, there's always a privation of a due good. Now, it's not just a privation of good, right? I mean, for example, the tree outside can't see. It lacks sight. Does that mean it's bad? Well, no, because it doesn't belong to the tree to see, right?
Oh, okay.
So it's a privation of a due good. It's a privation of what ought to be there, given the kind of thing it is.
Right.
Now, here's the key. Once we understand that, Cy, that evil is a lack of being, a lack of a good that ought to be there, well, then we can see that it's not some existing thing that God's going to create. You know, the philosopher Brian Davies puts it like this: what is not there cannot be thought of as made to be by the source of the being of things.
Yes.
So the proper effect of God and his creative activity is being. So if evil is the lack of being, well, then evil is not an effect of God's creative activity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, somebody might say, well, Carlo, are you saying evil is just an illusion?
Oh, no, I see. Yeah.
No, right. We're not saying that.
No.
Because the eye, in the case of blindness, really does lack sight. The privation is really there, right?
Yes.
It's a reality. The sock really does lack the fabric that it ought to have.
So it's real, but it's not a thing.
It's
the absence of a thing.
It's the absence of being. That
right.
Absence is really there, but it's not a subsistent thing that God creates and sustains in existence. So this is, like you said, this is sort of how this dealing with this particular problem of the problem of evil, right? And the problem being, well, God's the creator of all things, evil exists, therefore God must create evil. Well, then we respond and say, no, evil's not a thing that God creates. And so, of course, that brings up the next question. Well,
who did this?
That's right.
we experience ourselves in a situation where we don't come into the good and then we see how the lack entered. We enter into a situation where we're born into this world of a world that's already lacking a great deal morally and physically.
Right.
And so what if God is not the cause of that?
Creator of those things.
Yeah, the creator. So what is his relationship to those things?
That's a good question.
To those lacks, to those privations.
Yeah, so whence do those privations come? Well, if we're talking about physical evil, right? If we just look at physical evil for a second, we can see that physical evil is part and parcel of the material world. So in as much as you have material things, barring God's miraculous activity, right? But just looking at it from a natural perspective, material things are subject to corruption, right? So the tree outside in philosophy, we say it has matter and form, right? So it's got some stuff and that stuff is put together in a certain way. But in as much as it's a material thing, it's subject to corrupt.
It can break down.
It can break down into its component parts, so it can die, right? Now, what's interesting, when you philosophically analyze in the philosophy of nature, right, material things, what you discover is that the breaking down of one thing is always due to the flourishing activity of something else. That the goodness of one thing curtails the goodness of another. Whenever you have corruption, you have generation. Where there's generation, there's corruption. That's part and parcel of the material world. So whenever the fire burns in the forest and kills the animal experiences the physical evil due to the flourishing activity of the fire. The fire is doing what it's supposed to do, right? It's being good in the philosophical sense,
right?
In the sense that it's functioning as fire ought to function, right?
Yeah.
Whenever the lion eats the gazelle experiences physical defect, right?
Yeah, that's not good for the gazelle.
Not good for the gazelle, but it's good for the lion.
Yeah.
So in the material world, the goodness of one thing curtails the goodness of another. Now, God's causal role with... Oh, we're going to have to come back on the other side of the break.
That's good, though, because I want to sit with that for a minute. The goodness of one thing curtails
the goodness of another. Part and parcel of the material world.
That's just how the material world works.
Correct.
Carlo Broussard is our guest. We're talking about the problem of evil on this Feast of the Assumption of Mary. We'll take a quick break and be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Can we really say the Bible is inerrant when it seems to contain so many internal contradictions about allegedly factual events? What are the two basic interpretation problems we encounter when we read the Bible? How can we deal with difficulties arising from translation differences, copyist errors, and varying literary genres? 20 Answers Bible Difficulties gives you the tools to recognize and reconcile common kinds of Bible difficulties and addresses the specific ones that most often embolden skeptics and dismay believers. 20 Answers Bible Difficulties is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com today and take a look at this exciting series from Catholic Answers Press.
In a culture that worships the pursuit of sexual pleasure, the Catholic Church's teaching on contraception can seem archaic and unintelligible. Its critics say it is outdated, theologically unfounded, and even harmful. And even faithful Catholics can have difficulty explaining this moral teaching. Catholic Answers is out to change all that. That's why we've just released Trent Horn's dynamic new DVD, The Case Against Contraception, using scripture, papal and magisterial teaching, natural law, and new insights provided by social science and medicine. Trent put forward a compelling case for Catholic teaching with his trademark charity and persuasive graciousness. Be prepared to give a defense. Order your copy of The Case Against Contraception today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging onto the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers YouTube channel. New subscribers welcome.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. There are a lot of misconceptions about the Catholic faith. We clear them up on Call to Communion, tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live on this Feast of the Assumption of Mary. We're visiting with Carlo Broussard this hour. Carlo is the author of Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church, a very fine book you might want to give to somebody heading off to college. I think it's just the perfect book to give to somebody heading off to college. You can get it on sale now at shop.catholic.com because they got the back-to-school sale going on over there. And now I want to make clear before we go any further that, especially for those just joining us, Carlo expressed at the beginning of the program that the problem of evil is actually several problems. There are several intellectual problems that we might identify as problems with evil. But there's a whole category that is the emotional problem of evil. That is, how do we deal with the evil that's all around us and often can overwhelm a life, even an innocent life. And so we're not neglecting the emotional one. We're just trying to tackle the intellectual ones, and we'll get to the Christian – it's essentially a Christian response to the emotional
– correct.
The emotional problem of evil. Okay, so evil is not a thing. God didn't make it. Evil is privation. It's always the lack of a thing, always a lack of a good.
Correct.
So that's where kind of where we left.
And then we're asking the question, well, whence does that privation come?
Okay.
Well, when we're talking about physical evils, right? So,
right.
You know, the blindness in the eye or the tree dying, right? Or the animal dying or even a human being dying, right? When we're talking about physical evil, the privation that we find in physical evils is in the material world due to the flourishing activity of something else. I mean, Cy, if you drink too much whiskey, man, you're going to get a headache, right? Why? Because the whiskey's doing what it's supposed to do. It's flourishing in its activity.
Right, right.
So the idea is that the privation in the material world and physical evil is always due to the flourishing activity of something else.
Yes.
And so there's when we're talking about physical evil, the philosopher Brian Davies points this out. There's always a concomitant good, a good associated with that physical evil, right? And so what is God's causal role with this? Well, God is causing the goodness of one thing, right? So the fire that's burning and doing what it's supposed to do is due ultimately to the causal activity of God, and that accidentally kills an animal or the lion that eats a gazelle. Well, the lion is flourishing and being the kind of thing that it is and doing what it does, and that ultimately reduces to God's causality as creator and sustaining that thing in existence. So God's causal role is with regard to the goodness of that one thing that is flourishing,
yes,
which accidentally curtails the goodness of something else.
That predator example puts me in the mind of this. Well, the predator is bringing physical evil to that particular gazelle, but actually predators bring good to the species of gazelles. So there's a bigger picture too, where that physical evil is contributing to a whole.
Yeah, Thomas Aquinas points this out in the Summa Theologiae when he's talking about evil and how God can permit evil in certain things in order to contribute to the good of the whole. So even death itself, right? I mean, think about this. Given the fact that God creates a material world where there's successive generations of living things, right? If there were no death, well, then our planet would no longer be able to house all of these living beings, right? That would be a problem. And even the destructive activity of bacteria, of dead things when they die, of corpses, right? I mean, that bacteria is flourishing given the kind of things that it is, which contributes to the good of the whole.
That's what I'm getting at.
In as much as it eats away the corpses, right? If our planet was just filled with dead things of corpses, then that wouldn't be a good thing either, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there is this idea where you can, Thomas Aquinas points this out, where you can see how it's reasonable that God would permit certain physical evils in order to contribute to the good of the whole. And here's a great example that Dr. Ed Fazer uses in some of his work. Consider a professor who's writing, drawing a circle on the chalkboard, right, or the dry erase board, whatever, and then he stops in the middle and only leaves a half-drawn circle. Now, you, Cy, might think, well, golly, that's a dumb professor. He's stupid and disingenuous. He couldn't, you know, he didn't put all of the goodness of a circle into the circle that he could have put.
Yeah.
Right? Well, if he's looking out only for the circle, well, then yeah, he would be a bad professor because he didn't put all the goodness that he should have put into the circle.
Right.
But given the larger context of the whole, that he's trying to teach his philosophical students about the philosophical idea of evil being a privation of a do good.
Right.
Well, then you see the reasonableness of the professor permitting the evil, the privation, in order to contribute to the whole of the good of the whole, namely philosophical knowledge for his students in his philosophy class. And similarly, Aquinas argues that there are certain evils that God can permit within the material world in order to contribute to the good of the whole. Now, that's with regard to physical evil.
Yeah,
now the question comes, well, what is God's causal role with moral evil? And this is where we have to be very clear. It's essentially different. Because whereas in physical evil, God is willing and causing the goodness of one thing, which curtails the goodness of other and brings about physical evil in the material world.
Right, and contributes to a whole.
And can contribute to the whole.
Right.
When it comes to moral evil, God is in no way causally related to the privation in the sin. Remember, moral evil or sin is a failure to achieve the good. A failure to – it's missing the mark of what the action should have achieved.
So when I'm unjust, it's a failure to do justice.
It's a failure to do justice.
And God is not causally connected to that in any way.
He's not causally connected to the defect or the privation or the lack in any way.
Gotcha.
What God – the way in which God is causally related is that he is sustaining – so I'm the sinner, right? Yeah. He's sustaining me in existence, right? Because I could not be and be distinguished from nothing if it weren't for God sustaining me and willing me to exist right here and right now. Nor could I even exercise my freedom and do an action without God's causal activity, right? But the defect is entirely due to my misuse of the free will. And here's an example that Aquinas gives. So suppose, you know, I got some sort of disease in my leg, all right, or my leg is defective in some way, and I'm limping as I walk, right? Is the limp due to the defect in the leg, or is the limp due to the my power to move my leg?
I see.
The limp is due to the defect in the leg.
Right.
Right? Not my power to move the leg.
Right.
Similarly, in sin, the defect in sin is not due to God who's causing the person to give him the power to even act to begin with.
Yes.
The defect in sin is due to the moral agent himself who misuses his freedom in order to direct his activity to that which is good for him, you see? So whereas God can be indirectly involved in the physical evil, with physical evil and causing the goodness of one thing to curtail the goodness of another, when it comes to moral evil, there's no concomitant good going on that's connected to the defect. And so God is in no way causally related to the defect, just causally related to the person existing and that person acting. And so there are two essential different ways in which God is causally related to physical evil and to moral evil. And I might conclude with this sign saying that God will not permit either physical evil or moral evil unless there is some greater good that he wills to bring about, or there is some great good that would be lost
if he were to intervene
and wipe out that evil. And that's an important point there.
So if it seems like help me out if I'm getting it wrong what you're saying, but it seems like God makes a world that can be shared by other persons, spirits and humans that we know of, okay? So all we can share in it, and it's if we do it all God's way, if nobody ever says, "No, I'm going to take it from here, God. I got it. I'm going to do this injustice over here. It'll make things easier." It would all be good and it would all flourish. There wouldn't be any evil in it. But the introduction of evil is moral evil is because persons, whether spiritual or physical persons, like or hylomorphic persons like ourselves,
very good, Si.
Both spiritual and physical persons, at some point said, "Nah, that's it. That's the only reason that there's moral evil in the world."
Yes,
because God made it possible for us to be good, and he gave us everything good.
Right.
And we chose. And by the we, I mean everybody who's not God.
Yes. Moral evil, the possibility of moral evil comes from God willing to create us with the capability to choose good or evil. And see, this brings up an interesting point because I believe, as I studied the material, I think that God could have created us. It's technically possible that God could have created Adam and Eve and all of us with the beatific vision, as the souls, as the blessed do in heaven right now, to where you cannot choose evil. You're impeccable. You can only choose the good. So it brings up the question, well, what good is it in God creating us in such a condition to where we're not we're not defined in the good,
right,
with the
right.
beatific vision.
He doesn't define us. He leaves it to us.
He leaves it up to us to
Why?
Define our moral character through our choices of good over evil. And I think the key, Cy, and I point this out in my book, the answer, I think, lies in the dignity, in the nobility, in human beings being real causes of their own moral quality, moral perfection. Now, of course, for my theologian friends out there, that's always within cooperation with God's grace, right? But there is a dignity and nobility in being real causes. God bestows upon even natural things that are not intelligent to be real causes of real effects,
yeah,
right?
Right?
So there's a participation in God's causality, which bestows a dignity upon us, in particular humans, to be real causes, not just of, you know, natural things in the world, but even our own moral perfection, in as much as we choose the good over the bad. And that, Cy, I think, seems reasonable, and based upon my reading of Aquinas, that it would contribute to our eternal reward in heaven.
Oh.
That the happiness of heaven would be proportioned, our experience of happiness of heaven, right, would be proportioned to this effort that we make in choosing the good over the bad. So think about it like this. You know, would you rather be the number one seed in the league of basketball, whether it be high school or pro, and you're the only team? Or would you rather be the number one seed in pro basketball and to beat out all 50 other teams or however many teams
I
there
see.
Are?
You see yeah. what I'm saying? Right, right.
So the idea of
I got to participate in getting to be the number one seed.
The victory won is that much sweeter when there is effort that is the means to get to the victory. So not only is it more noble for God to allow us to be real causes of our human perfection, but inasmuch as we put forth the effort in cooperating with God's grace to choose good over evil contributes to the sweetness of our experience of the beatific vision of heaven, which God could have given us without all of that cooperation
yeah,
stuff
right.
and that those choices we have to make. But I think the experience is far greater given that he created us in such a condition where we have to choose good over evil. So it has to do with this nobility that belongs to this ability to choose good over evil. And so given that God will to create us in that condition, well, then arises the possibility of moral evil.
Yeah.
And we know from theology and from Revelation that our first two parents who were given that great nobility to choose good over evil exercised their freedom against the good and chose evil. And from that, much evil for humans
right.
ensued. And
right.
so this is yet another element of the whole complex situation. Christianity has an answer of whence did evil come for human beings? Like, why is it that we experience physical evils in our life? Why do we have to suffer? Well, Christianity has an answer. Our first parents screwed it up due to moral evil.
So wait, just real quick.
Yeah.
So we're moving then. We can move. That's kind of a bridge then to move
yeah.
from the intellectual problems of evil, which are real problems, into what you call the emotional problem of evil. And,
yes.
and theology, Christian theology has help for us there. Wait, I don't want you to get into it yet.
Okay.
Because we do have to take a break.
I'm but chomping that's where, at the bit.
No, because I think a lot of people will be waiting for that.
Yeah.
Like, okay, but yeah, but help me deal with this tremendous burden of evil,
sure,
Carla.
Sure.
Are you going to talk like this when we go on the cruise, by the way? Are you going to do talks like this? Or
yes,
yeah?
I will.
Right.
But I tell you what, there'll be a little bit more pizzazz and zeal and flair.
Because you'll be wearing some
kind of fancy
Caribbean shirt while you're getting them?
I got to be restrained on the radio, man. I got to
temper. That's true. You do get
the flair.
Yeah. Oh, the full Carlo intensity
that's
will
right.
come out. All right, that's
well,
good.
We see, if I put all my cards on the table now, Cy, then nobody would ever come listen to me at my talks.
Yeah, that's true. And, or to come on the cruise with us. I'm supposed to tell people about that we're going to be, Carlo and I will both be on the cruise along with Chris Check, Tim Staples is going to be giving talks, and several others. I know I've got him here. Oh, I know Father Chrysostom Bear is going to be there. So
fantastic.
That's a great lineup. And they're going to, it's also
and he's a Norbertine, right?
Yeah, he's a Norbertine priest.
Those are some sharp dudes, man.
It's also just a come away time.
That's
right. You know, just come away. And we enjoy ourselves. We have lots of intense conversations. Also, we have a lot of fun. It's February 10th through 17 aboard Holland America's new Stottendam, which will be almost virtually a brand new ship. It will be virtually. I think they'll hit.
They better screw those screws on tight, brother. Well, I just got to say that.
There'll only be like one or two cruises before us.
Wow.
So you're getting into it. So how do you get it? How do you join us on that cruise? You go to CatholicAnswersCruise.com. Go to CatholicAnswersCruise.com and come with us February 10th through 17th. Sail around the Caribbean and hear Carlo and Tim and Chris and Father Chrysostom, and I'll be there. I don't know what my job is, but I'll be there.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
Here's one thing that I would recommend, what I call gap time. So, for example, you're driving in the car. When you're at home, maybe doing dishes, what are you listening to on the plane? See, I use all those gap opportunities and fill those gaps with things that are going to strengthen and deepen my faith. So I listen to EWTN podcasts all the time because I also want to learn and grow and deepen in my faith.
We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thank you so much for being with us here today. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Carlo Broussard, the author of Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel and the Church, is our guest. We've done a lot of intellectual work on the problem of evil, Carlo, but it doesn't...
And there's a lot more.
Yeah, right. That's right. But we've done... We've done our fair radio share today.
Yeah, amen.
But, I'm still... Say I'm... You know, people face a great deal of suffering as a consequence of evil. So what about the person who says, look, give me some light, shine some light in the darkness of suffering, not just give me intellectual answers, but give me some light.
Yeah. Well, I would say that the intellectual answers do provide light, but there are higher intellectual answers beyond the natural light of human reason that we can use in order to shed light. And that comes through the revelation of Jesus Christ. So through Christian revelation, through Old Testament, Jewish revelation, actually, you know, and then as seen and looked at through the Christian lens, the church teaches that had Adam and Eve not sinned, that no human being would suffer. There would be no suffering for human beings. Now, the church teaches in paragraph 310 that even prior to the fall, there was generation and corruption. So animals were coming into being and going out of being and dying. Right. So there was death in the world. There was physical evil in the world. But for human beings in particular, Christianity has a unique answer to the question, whence does evil come? That is, for humans, it starts with the moral evil of Adam and Eve. The church teaches that had they remained in divine intimacy, that no suffering would have ensued for human beings. But because they disobeyed God, death and suffering enters into human history, as the Catechism points out. But God did not leave humanity orphan. God sent his only begotten Son, who died on the cross so that we can go to heaven. But not only that we can go to heaven, Si, but also to empower us and to transform our very suffering into a means by which we can achieve our own salvation and the salvation of others. So you might have this symphony and you might have a discordant note. And what God, and that discordant note is suffering and death in the world. But what God does is he takes that discordant note and he creates a whole new symphony through his Son, Jesus Christ. We see the greatest example of God bringing out a greater good from an evil in Jesus' death on the cross. It's the greatest evil that has been perpetrated and could possibly be done. And that is deicide, the killing of the God-man, Jesus Christ. But from that evil, God drew forth the greatest good, the redemption of the human race and the possibility of you going to heaven individually and me going to heaven individually, and the grace to unite me to God as a son of the Father, to give me salvation. That's the greatest good possible. Well, here's the beautiful thing of the Christian message relative to suffering. Our sufferings in our lives, when endured through Jesus Christ, out of love of God, can actually be the means by which I achieve that greatest good of salvation. It can contribute to my salvation. So, for example, St. Paul would talk about this very often when he says in Romans chapter 8, verse 17 through 18, I think it's 18, the sufferings of this life pale in comparison to the glory to come. So there is a glory to come that will offset the tragedy of the sufferings that I experience in this life. But yet, my sufferings, when united to Christ, can actually lead me to heaven, in as much as my sufferings can be an act of worship, Si, because St. Paul writes in Romans 12:1, lift up your bodies as living sacrifices, pleasing in the sight of the Lord. So if I offer my body through my suffering, whatever trials I'm going through, to God, that's an act of worship, according to Paul. And inasmuch as it's an act of worship, it's an act of love. And if an act of love, then it can contribute to me receiving my final salvation at the end of time. It's a way of being heroic, not only with regard to achieving my own salvation side, but also other people's salvation. So, for example, I might ask you, do you think it's a good thing, Si, for a person to lay down, for a soldier to lay down his life and sacrifice in order to win the freedom for others?
Yes, that's a tremendous thing.
Now, wouldn't it be great if you could lay down your life, if you could make sacrifices to win the freedom for others? Yeah, you might say, well, I don't know if I want to go on the battlefield.
I'm just being very careful with my answer here, Carla. But yes, if it's a great good, it would be a great good in my case as well.
Well, the Christian message is that we can be those heroes to sacrifice for the freedom of others. Because when I suffer, Si, and I offer it up to God out of love for others, out of love for God and out of love for others, well, then it can merit actual graces, help from on high, right? Yeah. That God can shower upon the person I'm offering this suffering for to lead them to goodness, to lead them to truth, to set them free from the bondage of sin, and to lead them to salvation. And St. Paul writes about this. For example, in 2 Corinthians 1:6, he says, if we suffer, it's for your comfort and salvation. In Colossians 1:24, he says, I fill up what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ. I rejoice in my suffering, he says, because I fill up what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ for the sake of the church, which is the body of Christ, right? So Paul understands that his suffering can contribute to the good of the members in the church, that it can contribute to their salvation. And this is precisely because we are members of the mystical body of Christ, as St. Paul tells us and teaches us in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, where one part suffers, all parts suffer. Where one part rejoices, all parts rejoice, right? So inasmuch as we are members of the mystical body of Christ, we can offer our sufferings for each other to increase in grace and to contribute and to be led to their final salvation. For those who are outside of the body of Christ, somebody who's not baptized or somebody who's in mortal sin, I can still offer my sufferings up to God for that person to merit a showering of what we call actual graces, where God is going to give them a little temporary help, right? To enlighten the mind, to move the will towards the good. So our sufferings not only can contribute to our own salvation, in as much as I offer it up to God as an act of love, which is going to contribute to my salvation, but also it can contribute to the salvation of others. And that's the beauty of the Christian message. That's the light that Christianity can shine in the midst of the darkness to say, hey, look, your suffering doesn't have to be for nothing. It can be imbued with a salvific value, in as much as you unite it to Christ, and Christ can use that suffering, right, as a means to bring about the salvation of souls. And finally, Cy, as I point out in my book, I think what Christianity offers the person who's suffering, as Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI pointed out in his encyclical Spes Salvi, that the Christian message throws open the dark door of time, because it reveals to us our destiny of heaven, a life of definitive, supreme satisfaction and happiness that will redeem all suffering. As Paul says, that glory is so profound. No suffering in this life, sufferings of this life pale in comparison to that glory. Suffering is tragic, but it's not ultimately tragic. Thanks be to God.
What a way to end on the Feast of the Assumption, where Mary herself taken into exactly that.
That glorious existence.
That glorious existence. Carlo Broussard, thank you so much.
Thank you, Cy.
Very
fine. It was a pleasure,
hour.
My friend.
The book is Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. It's on sale now at shop.catholic.com. Take a quick break and be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.